during the considerable portion of the past year, Peter Kelly, one of our directors, and right now a whole lot more importantly, the conference committee chairman responsible for all of this.
Thank you. Thank you.
Has spent, as I say, quite a considerable length of time intensively working with Dr. Hieronymus in Georgia, and we are extremely fortunate in having Pete
that scares me
to give us kind of a little insight into what's been happening with Galen, not only very recently, but some of the past history and so forth, that only someone who is there, you know, intimately with a person for an extended period of time can really even begin to get into. So, I give you Pete.
Thank you. I think I'd like to do this on a question and answer type of format. Naturally, there'll be some types of questions that I won't be able to answer as far as technology and so forth goes, but as far as the man, as far as what the man has done, or very general questions on the technology, I can answer according to Dr. Hieronymus's view. And if you'd like to do that, then we can approach it from that way. Yes.
Why did he take it upon himself to set up this Oasis publication?
Okay. The Oasis is a piece of land where he lives in Lakemont, Georgia. It was named Oasis 40 years before he first moved there. After he moved there, he just never changed the name. It was always his Oasis away from the rest of the world. And to answer your question, I would have to say that Dr. Hieronymus has always had a curious mind in the about 10 or 12 years that I've known him now. And when there weren't immediate answers to something, he would go in head first. That is why he started the metaphysical, and it is purely metaphysical, paper called The Oasis. He's totally involved in metaphysics right now. Not too much into the new aspects of radionics or psychotronics. But as a true explorer, he went head first to try to find out for himself the validity, first as a science and then to himself. Does that answer that? Yeah.
Could you tell me what aspects of metaphysics he's involved in now?
Mostly trans-medium work with his wife, who has the professional name Sarah Gran. She channels information for him, and then they transcribe it, condense it, and put it into a monthly paper called The Oasis. Now, for a person that is an advanced student of metaphysics, it's one of the finest of its type. He devotes almost 3 out of 4 weeks in a month working full time putting it together. It's about 50 pages long and a lot of work for somebody 86 years old.
Is that a monthly publication?
Yes, it is.
Can we get it?
Oh, absolutely. Just write P.O. Box 109, Lakemont, Georgia, and send $12 and they'll send you all you want, or at least a year's worth. P.O. Box 109, Lakemont, Georgia. 30552. Yes?
Could you say something more about it, the source, the origin of this information that he's putting in the Oasis?
I'm not terribly metaphysically orientated in the, everything that he is doing, okay? Source. We get into a metaphysical chart that says hierarchy, and then we go down, then there's other ones that are part of the hierarchy, and these are the sources of the information that he gets through the medium, which is Sarah Gran, records and transcribes.
Are the spacecraft symbolical, therefore?
I would say so, yeah. Yes. Any, yes?
What are you doing down there? You're not in the metaphysical part of it. What work are you doing with Dr. Hieronymus?
Okay. It has, first, to better learn how to use my own instrumentation, which turned out to be very, very similar to Dr. Hieronymus's. Now, I never had the opportunity to see his more modern units, and that means in the last 8 or 9 years. And I had built them from my own conception of what they should be. And when I first went down in October of this past year, I was pleasantly surprised to find out we thought the same way, or at least I was able to read his mind the same way. And so I have continued on the research aspect of the applications and uses and the various anything that could work into psychotronics. Psychotronics or radionics, as it was first used, they use a specimen or a witness of the person that they were checking, or the plant they were checking, or the animal they were checking, and they were able to scan with pre-established numerical rates for a disease in a given location. Now, all of the systems work that way at some level, whether it has 50 knobs or 2 knobs or 1 knob. They all work the same way. And because of the nature of this energy, the fact that it has optical characteristics, the fact that it has electrical characteristics, that it has magnetic characteristics, electrostatic characteristics, but due to the fact that it's none of all of these, but a little of all of them, we've been able to try other things that don't seem to, at first glance, incorporate into that system to see the validity of them to the system. And I'll give you an example just so that some people, for example, believe that gemstones are very valuable in healing. Well, why would they be unless, like Dr. Hieronymus said, they give off an emanation of some sort that the person who would wear it is receptive to and indeed needs. Now, can this same vibration be transmitted the same way that the life force energy is in the various types of radionic devices or psychotronic devices? And the answer is yes. The same with magnetic waves or any number of other things that we have been working on. Any other questions?
Metaphysicians would say that, I noticed that Dr. Hieronymus mentioned that, and you yourself said something about the object emanating the energy. Some metaphysicians would say that the energy creates the physical object, and certainly some studies would confirm that.
I don't think it's denied anywhere along the line.
Okay. I wonder how that fits in. You're thinking that when you go after...
The best answer I can give you to that is make doggone sure you don't miss Tom Bearden's lecture today. Because he has the most complete physics concept of how it all ties together. Yes?
Are there books of rates that a new radionics operator would be able to get from a good source like Hieronymus, where you would have some idea? Take a long time to start building yourself.
Right.
Well,
the people that build machines and teach people, if they are worth their salt, have the rates to give with the machines. And if they don't have the rates, then I would question the validity of these machines to begin with. So somebody that in the past would have taken Dr. Hieronymus's course, or takes anybody else who builds instruments course, should have some decent rates as a result of it, or what's the use? Why are you there? Yes.
Are the rates the same on all machines?
Of like type, yes. There's basically, he went into a little bit, but not too much. The two major classification is type. One is the variable resistance types, which I call the English types, even though there are people that make them here, and consist of rows of decade resistors. That was also the type that was first made by Abrams. Back in the 30s, a fellow by the name of Wigelsworth in Chicago and another fellow tried variable condensers, or as they call them today, variable capacitors, and found that the same rules applied for tuning, however, the points were different on them. So you have two basic types of tuning systems, and each has its own sets of rates. Within their type, they correspond. Between the types, they don't necessarily by number. However, the two types of machines can be connected together, and the rates can be crossed over. Yes. Did that answer that?
What is the other type? One type is
variable condenser and variable resistor in some form, whether it's a proportion of a slider over a wire, or a potentiometer, or decade resistance, which is resistance in rows on a switch. It's still either an inductance or a resistance, and the other type is a capacitance. They're all proportional instruments. They all work by proportion.
Pete, how are the rates determined? You know, when you get a rate.
A lot of practice by a lot of people in the past. A lot of practice by a lot of people in the past coming up with the same results for the same organ systems, glands, and so forth. Purely empirical. Yes? There are, down there, no. Not a lot is being done to the outside from down there. Most of ours is research within the location and goes out to people working in the field with his instruments from the past in other locations. Yes, there are people working with animal husbandry, but they're not down there. Any other questions? Yes.
How do these waves fall in relation to the frequency of these waves in relation to, say, ultrasound?
Well, a long ways away. Most of the work and research has shown that they set up right near light. Okay.
Could you repeat that? Right near light?
Right near light frequencies. Right. Way up in the angstrom range of the spectrum, electromagnetic spectrum. But there again, it's not purely electromagnetic. Okay.
His commentary about is one machine not working in sunlight properly.
That was an open, not inside a case machine.
I see. Okay. And the case machines take care of that problem.
For the most part. There's other considerations that have to be taken into account. And the fact is that this energy seems to regard the world a little different than we do, and some things that we would think of as transparent are not to it, and vice versa.
So if your machine doesn't work properly, it could be some interference you're not aware of that you...
Either that, or you have one that was built by somebody that didn't take these types of things into consideration, or is most of them as consideration as possible. For example... okay. some types of wire, the energy goes right through, insulation and all. Other types of wire, the insulator behaves as an insulator. Some types of plastics, for example, the energy goes right through. And other types, it doesn't. Some types of wood, the same thing. Oak, bakelite, and rubber-based or the new Teflon-based plastics do not allow the energy to go through. Most everything else does. Yes?
Along those lines, who's making the best machines now, and is it illegal to manufacture those machines in the United States?
Who's making the best? I would have to say that would have to be a judgment by a individual on what they see as the different types. There are going to be displays and demonstrations later on in the evening tonight on these machines. Okay? Now, what was the other part of that?
Is it illegal to manufacture these machines in the United States?
No, what they finally did is they put it down to a rather tricky way of controlling it. It can't legally be transported across state lines. Okay? As far as the manufacturer is concerned.
Along the same area of questioning, do you have any credibility committee in evaluating what is considered a report on equipment? In other words, what guidelines?
For a person that isn't involved right now, for example?
No, your organization.
We have a very limited standards and practices committee that is still relatively new that we hope that one day we'll be able to say at least that this will work for some people and that doesn't work for no people, you see. But we can't even claim that we can do that. It has to, you know, a person that would get involved should make a very careful study and not buy an instrument until they first have some idea that they can work it, no matter whose instrument it is.
Could you give an example of some of the non-biological applications of radionics, such as, we're concerned mostly with health, and I don't care about
non-destructive testing, chemical testing. I don't know. I don't think Dr. Hieronymus mentioned it, but at one time, immediately after World War II, 3M was having a heck of a time with their Scotch tape, which at that time was a relatively new product. Well, they were getting tank car loads of a petroleum product from a chemical company. And one tank car load of the same chemical would work, and the next tank car load wouldn't. And this was costing many thousands of dollars back when 3M was just a very baby company. And they were panicky. Well, through a friend of a friend and so forth, they did get in touch with Dr. Hieronymus and found out that there was his type of an analysis showed where it wouldn't show on a spectrographic analysis. We're talking about less than 1% of, say, pollution by another chemical. That's all. And he could detect to that level, and nobody else could. So chemical analysis, non-destructive testing. I believe he's published papers on monitoring the Apollo 8 and Apollo 11 missions to the moon and of the various astronauts, and actually found a radiation belt around the moon at a certain level. In the hands of a good operator, doggone things do most anything. Yes?
Is there a basic difference between, like you would, ones made here in the States or the ones that we've made in England? Now,
I was classifying them as to a type. Variable resistance as compared to variable capacitance.
Well, what was a big difference now in England? I remember reading where they had tried to develop mixtures right on them, but I have never heard anything more about it. I don't know if it's the same type of instruments.
Delaware Labs has done some, and in the Delaware papers there is information on how to do it. So I'm going to, you know, it's not our field. Yes?
Molecular unknown, at least I assume it's molecular
He's pretty much become a closed loop now. He doesn't take any new input at all.
Okay.
He's working with the past. Find somebody else here that does that and approach them the same way. I'm sure they'd be more than happy to. Sam?
Let's say he had his industrial analyzer and you tuned for some, you were tuning it for some substance. You got a rate that's different. In other words, if you got some rate that was not recognized in the book, and I presume that is conceivable.
There's new rates being made all the time, but that would be more or less a backwards approach to find a rate. You would go looking for something that you knew first to find a number to more often get a new rate.
Yeah. So
unless you were working with molecular chemistry where you knew that the the isotopes or the various elements and their numbers as they exist, we're already into the machine.
Yeah, I see. In other words, if you did find something that was unknown to you, but in an attempt to, say, analyze a substance, could you just break that down into its constituent parts?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
You can do protein analysis or whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
Has anyone actually done work in this sort of thing? Because I haven't seen anything in that.
Unfortunately, the whole existence of this organization is to try to bring the experimenters back out of the closets. You know, back in the 50s, they all went in their closets for different reasons. And this organization, by its very existence, hopes to have the researchers, and there's a lot of valid ones now in the United States. They're not all here. Some of them still are afraid. And we're getting short on time, right?
My name is Sam Lentine. I work at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in physics. And my particular interest is the use of radionics not only for diagnostic purposes, but for the effects of these, quote, energies, unquote, whatever they are, on the alteration of structure, the spectra of various substances. And I started with an experiment. It was back in 74 and 75 on altering the molecular structure of water from 300 miles away. It was done with a radionic instrumentation. I would like to see some participation, if there's anyone is inclined to participate in an experiment, whereby we would take the rates of a particular substance, such as an alcohol, for example, ethanol, whatever. And we take pure water. Of course, we would have a way of analyzing the spectra, whether it be infrared or anything like this, and broadcast those rates for the alcohol into the water. And my question is this. Granted, we need a biological system to detect these energies, but I haven't the slightest doubt, and we have the facilities at RPI to prove, that there will be some alteration in the structure of water, and I maintain that even though it may not take on the alcohol chain per se, because there might not be enough constituent particles, it's going to look somehow, it's going to resemble maybe in vibrational or rotational modes or something, it's going to resemble an alcohol. And if that is the case, I contend that we can synthesize drugs that aren't even on the market yet and reduce side effects of those that are, that will be of benefit to therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just point out to you in passing, you know, a gentleman in Britain, the late Malcolm Reagan, back did something very similar.
I'm not really prepared, you know, to give a lecture on work, but for those of us that do have some familiarity, you know, I mean, you'll be happy to learn that the idea has already been done by, you know, about 3/4 of the length of the agenda.
Well, he does have a publicizer.
Right.
But that's not quite...
No,
yes, it is. That is definitely close. But I'm wondering whether I'd like to see something analytical done, because I really think a lot of the, even the drugs that they're giving, of course, if you use radionics, you don't need a lot of the drugs for cancer therapy. But even if you're going to be a hard-nosed physician and say, yes, you need hydroxyurea to cure leukemia, well, I maintain that you can reduce the side effects or of the poisonous aspects of it, and you can produce a new drug which would have beneficial effects for not only cancer but anything else. And I'm even thinking of drugs for anesthesia and so forth. I know it can be done because we have duplicated some very peculiar effects at RPI.
I think when I was studying in England, I studied with a Dr. Beasley, and he had some gels that were color gels, and the radionics was able to charge these gels. I brought them back with me and waited in certain combinations to get certain results. For instance, two gels that I used experimentally, either wrap them around a glass of water and expose them for 5 minutes to something other than sunlight. I gave it to a patient, and within 3 days she lost 8 pounds just water weight, and that combination of gels exposed to them as diuretic. I didn't have the water tested. I don't know what happened to it.
What did you do with the gels again?
There's a certain combination of gels for certain situations, and this is a diuretic. These two color gels were put together, placed around the glass of water, and the water was drank over a period of 2 days. And in 8 days, she lost, 5 days, she lost 8 pounds.
Fascinating. Absolutely.
I mean,
that
goes back 4,000 years.
And the color, what was done to the gel,
would you mind watching it for play so we can pick it up on the mic?
Can I say it again?
Yes.
I'll make way short.
There was a Mr. Beasley when I was studying in England.
You want to speak in my pocket? Give me that.
Mr. Beasley in England, who I studied with quite a while, was a man very much in this field, a very sensitive man. And one of the things he developed was a way of taking color gels and some way treating them with radionics. I have the gels here, as a matter of fact. And through certain combinations of these gels, when light was exposed through these to water, you would have the patient or whoever you're treating with them drink the water. And being a skeptic, which I am, I enjoy being a skeptic, I took two gels which was supposed to have been a diuretic. I gave it to a patient. A patient drank it small bits over 5 days and lost 8 pounds. So it did work. She didn't know what it was for, so I didn't inject in her mind what it was for. Now maybe my mind had some effect on it, but I did not have the water analyzed. But there again, talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
My name is William Strankowitz, Columbus, Ohio. While he's coming up, let me just state for anyone who may not recognize the term, and correct me if I'm wrong if you're using it differently, a gel is just a, not a plastic, but like a piece of plastic colored acting as a light film. It comes from the gelatin, and is used a lot in photography and so forth. It's just a light filter to produce a certain color of light.
To refresh the memory of those of you who were with us in Houston last year, you may remember the two fabulous people that come down from Canada, Jim and Dorothy Marshall. Does anybody still remember them? They were speakers here. And one of the things that Jim and Dorothy Marshall did, and they spoke about at the meeting, you know, at our meetings, and then later on at the Luna Research Associates meeting, which was held the week after, was they were working with color therapy. And as a matter of fact, they told, you know, the assembled people, so I'm not repeating any, you know, any secret or anything, they were working at that time with, you know, children who were slow learners in an institution. And all they were doing, they would simply go to the school, they would get the kids to write their name on a card, and then they would put the card on, and those of us who are old-time fans, a Van Nordenhoff machine, or a modified Van Nordenhoff machine, which is a machine that allows you to meld and blend colors. And by appropriately melding and blending the right colors, they could do all kinds of therapeutic things, but not even shining them on the kids, but merely signing them on the signature cards. And for those of you who may remember, you know, as I do, I found it a fascinating bit of information, and certainly ties in with what's being done here.
quite different.
This is Dr. Judith Silvett, and in regards to this subject of potentizing or doing something to water, I am familiar, having discussed not too long back with the Malcolm Ray people, Margaret Gulcher to be specific, that they do have a rate for interferon. And some of their practitioners have been using that particular rate to treat people. I asked her, to what extent has it been effective? They said they thought they were getting some value out of the card, in other words, out of this interferon rate. I haven't had a chance to do anything with that information as yet, but it indicated what we were talking about, that we could do some work a little different than what is being usually considered in that area. Now, as far as cancer treatments, there has been some discussion that there might be a good value in doing radionic research with medical people who are using chemotherapy, with the idea being that you can cut down on the side effects.
Yeah.
If we can convince some parts of the medical establishment that here is a way to allow them to do some of their chemotherapy work and make it less deadly for the people they're working with, they may open the door to investigate radionics in the establishment area. And if we can find one suitable branch of the establishment that wants to pursue this, we may be able to make friends in the places where it would be good for everybody. Thank you.
I agree with that. In fact, we ran into a problem when I first started, before I was at the Institute, at RPI that is. I was a high school teacher, and I was into radionics. I had built an instrument which looks, well, it's a conglomeration of several things. It uses not only optical characteristics, but it uses both capacitive and resistive tuning. So I have some very peculiar rates. But we brought this machine into one of the laboratories at Niagara University. And a Professor McKeegan didn't know what we were going to do, but we asked him if we could borrow some slides and a microscope and everything, and he introduced the daphnia to us. They're microorganisms. And we demonstrated something to him that bothered him. He thought we were going to hook this machine. He saw this contraption, which looks like a... it'll fit on a table all right, and it doesn't look like any of the units I've seen here. In fact, mine is less beautiful looking. But it does the job, you see. That's all I cared about. We put a sample, a little scraping from a specimen in the well, and what I did essentially was to send a pulsing signal into the specimen well after I had tuned it, of course, to resonate with the daphnia. And what was seen, we got the diagrams, the organelles of the individual cells began to contract, and it looked like it was going into spasm. So when I reversed it, the polarity of the pulses, they went back to a normal, relaxed mode. So he said, well, gee, you're sending electric currents into these poor things. So I did it again, and he's looking for the wires. And of course, there was no connection, so I said, here, let me take it outside the room. And I did, and he became fascinated with the concept. He still doesn't know what we did. He calls it the Lentine machine, which all it does is rhymes, I suppose, but no, I didn't need any applause. Thank you. If I solicit that, how much will that cost? So I agree. I think if you do get some professors that are interested, now he's open-minded about it, and I've got some people at RPI that are open-minded about it. But many of the establishment, their position is very simple. And they say, hey, look, we know that something's going on there. Even if you prove it to them, they'll say, yeah, there's something going on there, and that's the trouble with it. You have no way of explaining it in terms of current science. And if you can't explain it to our satisfaction, in the mechanism side, even if we believe you, it's not going to be published, we can't go out on a limb. And that's the position of many universities. We can find some professors, some medical people who are even willing to go into this. And that's what's exciting about it. And now that I find this organization, boy, I'm not going to let go. I think this is fantastic. Well, maybe I would do it, but let's see if anyone else wants to. I don't want to be a mic grabber. And can I ask one question of anyone in here? And then I'll get away. And if there's still interest in that, when everyone's had their say.
He got a Nobel Prize for it, so he may as well.
No, I don't mean that. I'm just saying if there's interest after some other people have talked about other things, because I have had the mic a while.
Well,
let me just see what they want to do. I want to pose a question. Has anyone ever heard of the Zoll machine? The Zoll machine is supposed to be I guess there's a number of diagnostic instruments, but it's one that's supposed to detect not only what's wrong in the body, but what sort of allergies you would suffer from, what sort of how a drug would affect you, and so forth. You ever heard of that? It's supposedly costing like $3,000 to have it in this country. It was made in Germany. I don't know. It might be.
Yeah. If you would spell it Zoll, I think we would be able to.
Of course. Yeah.
That's my German's bad. Okay.
That's well known in certain circles in this country. Dr. Bowles has come here about a year and a half ago to lecture, and some of his key people have come back to continue that teaching. So there are doctors in this country who are using this equipment.
Is that just a radionic instrument too?
No, not at all.
It's an electronic acupuncture, if you want to think of it that way.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
What I wish to pick up as a corollary to what I brought out before and the interferon. Some people are taking, say, vitamin rates and feeding those to people with the idea that they don't need to take as many vitamins when they have been given treatment with the radionic device. They still would use some, but they can do much less. So the same idea would be less medication when given a treatment. Has anyone had occasion to look into that?
I'll say again, doctor, what?
I hit one hand in the back end. Do you want to add anything to this point? Yeah, we do it with color, but I'm thinking like specific, either a vitamin or some supplement that you consider helpful at the time.
Our natural health group.
Interferon? Yeah.
Well, yes. All right. The point was that there has been discussion that a large dose of vitamin C will help produce interferon, yes. But I agree with you, there has been comments along those lines. The only reason bringing this up is that many times you have people who cannot take the vitamins, they can't swallow the vitamins too much, and there's always a problem of cost and so on. And if you can combine working with rates to see whether or not they can get along with much less,
Are you suggesting too that what we would do is to broadcast those things which might induce the body to produce interferon on its own?
The concept seems to be that the body is able to utilize more efficiently. For instance, if we're talking in terms of minerals and vitamins, the body can do a better job with what you give it in terms of supplementation when you also give it support through the broadcast.
Ah, I see. Yeah, thank you, doctor.
And does it keep without any additives or cutting, or does it begin to lose that after?
It keeps
the question for the...
Okay, I think he asked if anyone's had an experience transferring energy to water, and does it keep? Now, you're talking about impotentizing or other process as well, right? The transference.
Right.
All right. What I have found at RPI, and the way we've done it, we've tested it in two ways. We've tested the effects of these energies transferred to water on growth rates of various types of plants, tomatoes and so forth, and we also would test it from the standpoint of spectra. And what we have found is that 1 year later, when we tested the same water on these plants, they not only made the plants grow just about as fast, if not, but always faster than the normal, the controlled. They also maintained this strange molecular structure, the shift, in other words, in the spectra. And this bothered spectroscopists because they're saying that water, whatever you do to it, water has a very small relaxation time. So if you hit it with some sort of energy and you stretch the bond a little and you gave it a jiggle and it vibrated and everything, at best, it should only stay in that for a matter of, maybe microseconds? And let's give it milliseconds. I mean, what's gonna keep it excited? And that's a good question. And they cannot accept the fact that what we've done has changed it and perhaps are using a higher dimensional mode. And if you want to use traditional quantum mechanics, maybe we're causing it to go to a state and there's a forbidden transition back, so it's going to take a real long time to get back to normal. Now, how long it's going to stay in that state, I don't know.
This is close enough. Are you able to hear me? Here's a general type question I would like to raise. This has to do with the establishment of various rates. You, when working in psychotronics, and you're working with rates. Now, whose rates are you using? You're using rates that come with the instrument, or you take some of the old round rates or other rates. What do you think about those rates? What do they represent? What about when you build your own instrument and you start working with rates that you discover? What do they represent? I would like to get some points from people who have been into this for years. Can we look at the rates as different languages? I mean, after all, they have different rates that refer to the same substance, to the same organ, or whatever the same is that we're considering. What are we dealing with in a situation like this?
If I may, I'd like to point out one thing, and not by any means to stop anyone who has any answer or information to contribute to that question, fine, come on along. But in Pete Kelly's demonstration and live hands-on bit this evening upstairs, one of his things will be showing you how to convert one set of rates into another set of rates, or somebody else's rates into the rates that you use, and so forth. So he's doing this quite successfully. That's only a partial answer, but it's in the right direction.
I would like to explore that even a little, one step further then. To understand, what do we mean by rates? What are we doing? Because I know one practitioner who's been into this field for more than some people's lifetime, and he's, continually updating his rates, finding a more effective rate, changing the numbers. Now, if the rate is valid the first time, why should he have to be able need to update or change the numbers to get a better rate, for instance? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What is the meaning of those numbers? Anybody care to express any thoughts on this?
Somebody else first.
We go to analogy. Julius, for example, let us say where we live, you have WOR, which is, 710 kilohertz. Now, if you've got a well-built radio, most of you know that once you start around 700, you can start tuning in. Just to pick that station, or even if you go over to 720, if you have a high enough gain, certainly the station sounds a little better at 710 than at 720. It will do, and you can hear. And you may miss a few of the high notes or the low notes if you don't tune in on the spot. But certainly analogously, the right number is better than the near right number.
Well, you found a number that was 200 the next time. Now that isn't close to the original number.
Well, it goes to prove that, Shakespeare was right when he said there's more in heaven and earth than ever dreamt of in your philosophy, Horatio. Once we get enough new numbers, we will suddenly discover that there is some relationship amongst them, in all probability. We haven't got enough data, and the data you've got a little, I've got a little, some other people have got a little, and maybe if we all pulled it, there would obviously be some logical mathematical sequence that will show up, or at least this is my hypothesis. I didn't want to appear to be monopolizing, but getting back to your interferon thing, you know, the people in Sweden, the interferon work began in Sweden, and they seem to have gotten remarkable results statistically on their work. Suddenly, we are doing work here in the United States, and the results are not anywhere statistically what they were in Sweden. And one of the things I suspect is the Swedes had very limited numbers. See, we've got to do it right, and we've got to do big numbers. The problem with interferon is the cookie stuff that has to be extracted from more cookie proteins, and I've got the sneaking suspicion that the quality or the quantity of pure interferon in that bottle labeled interferon in the United States is a hell of a lot less than the stuff in Sweden. And if you've got, give somebody 10 cc's of pure interferon, and yet you give them 10 cc's, 5 cc's of which are good, you can't expect the same therapeutic results. And I think the thing that we're going to discover with the interferon thing is not that interferon doesn't work as well, but half of the stuff we're injecting is crap, to use a technical phrase.
With regard to rates, in a kind of facetious mode, I think that it depends on the quality of the instrument. If you use a bad quality instrument, you're going to get a second rate. That's poor. But seriously, I think that what we've ignored here is the operator dependence, not on the rate per se, but let's say that an operator is trying to tune a radionic instrument and is just not either not that well trained, or they are not really that feeling up to par that day. And I've had times that one, or can I rely on the rate that I get? Now, when I'm looking for a rate, I don't rely on what I find the first time. What I have tried to do is to use, if I find a rate for a particular instrument, then I'll deliberately turn the dials, because I can't see the dumb things, and I depend on somebody to read it. I don't want to know what the rates are. I mean, I don't want to know what the numbers are. And I'll tune again and see if I come on that same rate. Then I'll have somebody else that I know is an operator. We'll flip the dials a little and have them tune and see what we're getting. Now, what I have found, if you get operators that are really good, I have found that they are pretty much going to get the same rates or close. And some even get, what's interestingly enough, some kind of harmonics. But they will get rates. And I don't think it's proportional to the frequency per se, but they'll get rates that are almost identical. And then I regard those as pretty accurate. And I think that's going to vary from one type of instrument to another, not from one instrument to another. You get two DLOR machines, they should be the same. But, like, I wouldn't expect that my rate, the machine that I built, I would not expect that my rate would be the same, exactly the same, as, say, a Hieronymus machine or a Gallimore machine, because I've included different modes of tuning as well, and so that has to be encompassed in the machine.
Comment, what have you. I think, obviously, to those that are here, this kind of an exchange, and we are having an exchange, is definitely of interest. Okay? Now, this organization hasn't yet done its job as far as publications and so forth are concerned. But the input is necessary. And we've begged for this kind of exchange through our publications. The vehicle has been almost available and is going to be available, but there's got to be these things coming in and going out. Charles, you have a comment.
David, last year I gave you at the Houston conference the paper, Vibrations Are Our Numbers. What a number means in the mind aspect of the operator. And you have
I'd like to see that.
We have it, and it will be, it is in the pile. Now, as of the present time, in fact, as of the time perhaps as recently as a couple of weeks at the most before this conference, it began to be apparent that, all right, by gollies, at this point we can see there's enough cash money available that we can, whoever
the new officers and so forth are, we can get this phase of it off the ground. And at least if we get it started, then certainly this will create enough interest and so forth that then it'll begin to perpetuate itself. This just hasn't been available. That's a very practical reason. It's not an excuse. There's no excuse. But it is the reason why this has not yet happened. But this is an essential thing in this organization. It must happen. So really all I'm doing right now is saying, okay, it hasn't happened. It's going to happen, and get the stuff in. Whether it's questions, things like Charles has offered, information that has been developed and so forth that can go out and be used and be commented on and other people can develop from and that sort of thing, beautiful. Anything. Dumb questions. There is no such thing. But anyone who has any kinds of questions, this is going to be the publication's route, particularly the newsletter route, which will be primarily for the membership and so forth. That's the place. And this is where we need to do these things. Okay?
Well, thank you. For an opportunity to, for all of us to really find out what's going on legitimately in the field. I mean, there's just nothing like this. I've never seen anything like this in this country. I mean, I constantly was looking for outlets, and you can't really exchange these type of ideas in, say, parapsychology organizations. And I'm not against parapsychology, per se. I mean, just saying that you can't, because they don't recognize psychotronics. Now, there's two schools of thought on it. So I definitely would encourage it. I'm kind of quite excited about it. Again, I'm glad that I'm here for that, for this purpose.
This question came about rates, and I met a man a couple of years ago who's doing a lot of work in flying saucer research. He's worked with Major Kehoe from Operation Blue Book. The Air Force is keeping out information on the web, so to speak. And in doing so, they confiscated some German documents that explained near the end of the war they had run out of medicine and doctors, and they were using a very unusual form for diagnosis, and treatment wasn't mentioned, but diagnosis was. What they were doing is attaching a wire to the patient's body in some place. I'm not quite sure how this works, but the wire was being drawn out from the body and being held, and that tension was evidently as important as it was just keeping it straight. And someone who is sensitive, and I don't know what the definition of that word is, but someone who is sensitive enough and probably someone who could handle a rubbing plate well, would take their fingers and move it down the wire very slowly, and they would feel null points, or where, say, the sinusoidal wave would cross the zero line, and they could, you'd say, here's one here, there's another one here, another one. They could measure that distance and find out what the waveform was, or the frequency, and from that, they went backwards to see what the organ was, and they found out, sort of in the back door through hit and miss, what some of these major problems were. I'm in the process now of trying to get those rates. And I think if we can get those, and if enough people are interested in doing that, we can kind of build an information source of rates. They can find a conversion factor or find out a general rate that's good for all equipment, because there's got to be some standard here. Okay, something else I mentioned earlier was these gels. I have the gels here, and I have an address. I can leave it with Mr. Rhodes if you like, or I can give it to you over the air, over the mic. And where to get a hold of this person in England and what to call them. And if nothing else, it's a great way to experiment. It's interesting, I'd forgotten this, that all these rates have been radionically placed on these colored gels, and you're about to see what a gel looks like, and they're minerals. They're all mineral, and they're usually gemstones. I'll pull a couple out here haphazardly. I'm the only one who've handled these in the past, so I think it's a good idea that I still be the only one to handle them. For instance, other beautiful colors. Here's one. It's sapphire, lapis, and cat's eye.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, sir.
For an experiment, and also announce at the moment that Pete Kelly is now holding forth on the floor above, immediately above this room. Why don't you take these things up here and see what kind of readings he can get on his device of the mineral content in
these. Pete and I live in the same town, so it won't be much problem to work with him. Okay?
And the special event entertainment, wine and cheese and so forth, is also open and available.
Okay, this is Jim Stranwitz, and we are talking about the solar color tinctures. These are colored gels that were developed by an R.P. Beasley, B-E-E-S-L-E-Y. His address is White Lodge, Stockland, Stockland, Green Road. It's all one sentence. Stockland Green Road, Speldhurst, Speldhurst, comma, capital N, small r, period. Not sure what that means. The town is Tunbridge Wells, Tunbridge, then capital Wells. It's in Kent, England. And their zip code is T as in Tom, N as in Nancy, 30TT. And their phone number, if you want to call them, is 089-286-3166. Okay, you can refer to them as solar color tinctures. These are gels that you expose light through to water. That's me. Okay?
My name is Sam Lentine. I work at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in physics. And my particular interest is the use of radionics not only for diagnostic purposes, but for the effects of these, quote, energies, unquote, whatever they are, on the alteration of structure, the spectra of various substances. And I started with an experiment. It was back in 74 and 75 on altering the molecular structure of water from 300 miles away. It was done with a radionic instrumentation. I would like to see some participation. If there's anyone is inclined to participate in an experiment whereby we would take the rates of a particular substance, such as an alcohol, for example, ethanol, whatever, and we take pure water, of course we would have a way of analyzing the spectra, whether it be infrared or anything like this, and broadcast those rates for the alcohol into the water. And my question is this: granted, we need a biological system to detect these energies, but I haven't the slightest doubt, and we have the facilities at RPI to prove, that there will be some alteration in the structure of water. And I maintain that even though it may not take on the alcohol chain per se, because there might not be enough constituent particles, it's going to look somehow. It's going to resemble, maybe in vibrational or rotational modes or something, it's going to resemble an alcohol. And if that is the case, I contend that we can synthesize drugs that aren't even on the market yet and reduce side effects of those that are, that will be of benefit to therapy. Yeah.
Sam, I might just point out to you in passing, you know, a gentleman in Britain, the late Malcolm Reagan, in fact, did something very similar. I'm not really prepared, you know, to give a lecture on his work, but for those of us who do have some familiarity, you'll be happy to learn that the idea has already been done by, you know, about 3/4 of the way he suggested.
Well, he does have a potentizer.
Right.
But that's not quite.
No, it's not quite, but it's almost close.
Yes, it is. That is definitely close. But I'm wondering whether. I'd like to see something analytical done, because I really think a lot of even the drugs that they're giving, of course, if you use radionics, you don't need a lot of the drugs for cancer therapy, but even if you're going to be a hard-nosed physician and say, yes, you need hydroxyurea to cure leukemia, well, I maintain that you can reduce the side effects or the poisonous aspects of it, and you can... produce a new drug, which would have beneficial effects for not only cancer, but anything else. And I'm even thinking of drugs for anesthesia and so forth. I know it can be done because we have duplicated some very peculiar effects at RPI.
When I was studying in England, I studied with a Dr. Beasley, and he had some gels that were color gels, and the radionics to be able to charge these gels. I brought them back with me and waited in certain combinations to get certain results. For instance, two gels that I used experimentally, either wrap them around a glass of water, expose them for 5 minutes to something other than sunlight. I gave it to a patient, and within 3 days, she lost 8 pounds, just water weight, and that combination of gels exposed to them in diuretics. I didn't have the water tested. I don't know what happened to it.
What did you do with the gels again? How did
the gels? There's a certain combination of gels for certain situations, and this is a diuretic. These two color gels were put together, placed around the glass in water, and the water was drank over a period of 2 days. I mean, 8 days, she lost.
Now, 5 days
she lost 8 pounds.
Fascinating. Absolutely. Maybe
that goes back 4,000 years.
And the color, what was done to the gel,
would you mind walking up the way so we can pick it up on the mic?
Yes.
Sure. I'll make way sure.
There was a Mr. Beasley when I was studying in England.
You want to speak in my pocket? Give me that.
Mr. Beasley in England, who I studied with quite a while, was a man very much in this field, a very sensitive man. And one of the things he developed was a way of taking color gels and some way treating them with radionics. I have the gels here, as a matter of fact. And through certain combinations of these gels, when light was exposed through these to water, you would have the patient or whoever you're treating with them drink the water. And being a skeptic, which I am, I enjoy being a skeptic, I took two gels which was supposed to have been a diuretic. I gave it to a patient. A patient drank it small bits over 5 days and lost 8 pounds. So it did work. She didn't know what it was for, so I didn't inject in her mind what it was for. Now maybe my mind had some effect on it, but I did not have the water analyzed. But there again, talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
My name is William Strangwitz, Columbus, Ohio.
While he's coming up, let me just state for anyone who may not recognize the term, and correct me if I'm wrong if you're using it differently, a gel is just a, not a plastic, but like a piece of plastic colored acting as a light film. It comes from the gelatin, and is used a lot in photography and so forth. It's just a light filter to produce a certain color of light.
To refresh the memory of those of you who were with us in Houston last year, you may remember the two fabulous people that come down from Canada, Jim and Dorothy Marshall. Does anybody here still remember them? They were speakers here. And one of the things that Jim and Dorothy Marshall did, and they spoke about at the meeting, you know, at our meetings, and then later on at the Hoonah Research Associates meeting, which was held the week after, was they were working with color therapy. And as a matter of fact, they told, you know, these humble people, so I'm not repeating any, you know, any secret or anything, they were working at that time with, you know, children who were slow learners in an institution. And all they were doing, well, all they were doing is they would simply go to the school, they would get the kids to write their name on a card, and then they would put the card on, and they would simply had a rather, what I call, those of us who are old-time fans, a Van Nordenhoff machine, or a modified Van Nordenhoff machine, which is a machine that allows you to meld and blend colors. And by appropriately melding and blending the right colors, they could do all kinds of therapeutic things, but not even shining them on the kids, but merely signing them on the signature cards. And for those of you who may remember, you know, as I do, I found it a fascinating bit of information, and certainly it ties in with what's being done here.
This is Dr. Judith Solid, and in regards to this subject of potentizing or doing something to water, I am familiar, having discussed not too long back with the Malcolm Ray people, Margaret Belcher to be specific, that they do have a rate for interferon. And some of their practitioners have been using that particular rate to treat people. I asked her, to what extent has it been effective? They said they thought they were getting some value out of the
car. In other words, out of this interferon rate. I haven't had a chance to do anything with that information as yet, but it indicated what we were talking about, that we could do some work a little different than what is being usually considered in that area. Now, as far as cancer treatments, there has been some discussion that there might be a good value in doing radionic research with medical people who are using chemotherapy, but the idea being that we can cut down on the side effects.
Yeah.
If we can convince some parts of the medical establishment that here is a way to allow them to do some of their chemotherapy work and make it less deadly for the people they're working with, they may open the door to investigate radionics in the establishment area. And if we can find one suitable branch of the establishment that wants to pursue this, we may be able to make friends in the places where it would be good for everybody. Thank you.
I agree with that. In fact, we ran into a problem when I first started, before I was at the Institute, at RPI that is. I was a high school teacher, and I was into radionics. I had built an instrument which looks, well, it's a conglomeration of several things. It uses not only optical characteristics, but it uses both capacitive and also capacitive and resistive tuning. So I have some very peculiar rates. But we brought this machine into one of the laboratories at Niagara University, and a Professor McKeegan didn't know what we were going to do, but we asked him if we could borrow some slides and a microscope and everything, and he introduced the daphnia to us. They're microorganisms, and we demonstrated something to him that bothered him. He thought we were going to hook this machine. He saw this contraption, which looks like it'll fit on a table all right, and it doesn't look like any of the units I've seen here. In fact, mine is less beautiful looking. But it does the job, you see. That's all I cared about. We put a sample, a little scraping from a specimen in the well. And what I did essentially was to send a pulsing signal into the specimen well after I had tuned it, of course, to resonate with the daphnia. And what was seen, we got the diagrams, the organelles of the individual cells began to contract, and it looked like it was going into spasm. So when I reversed it, the polarity of the pulses, they went back to a normal, relaxed mode. So he said, well, gee, you're sending electric currents into these poor things. So I did it again, and he's looking for the wires. And of course, there was no connection. So I said, here, let me take it outside the room. And I did. And he became fascinated with the concept. He still doesn't know what we did. He calls it the Lentine machine, which all it does is rhymes, I suppose. But no, I didn't need any applause. Thank you. If I solicit that, how much would that cost? So I agree. I think if you do get some professors that are interested, now he's open-minded about it, and I've got some people at RPI that are open-minded about it. But many of the establishment, their position is very simple, and they say, hey, look, we know that something's going on there. Even if you prove it to them, they'll say, yeah, there's something going on there, and that's the trouble with it. You have no way of explaining it in terms of current science. And if you can't explain it, to our satisfaction, in the mechanism side, even if we believe you, it's not going to be published, we can't go out on a limb. And that's the position of many universities. We can find some professors, some medical people who are even willing to go into this. And that's what's exciting about it. And now that I find this organization, boy, I'm not going to let go. I think this is fantastic. Well, maybe I would do it, but let's see if anyone else wants to. I don't want to be a mic grabber. And can I ask one question of anyone in here? And then I'll get away. And if there's still interest in that, when everyone's had their say.
He got a Nobel Prize for it, so you may as well. No,
I don't mean that. I'm just saying if there's interest after some other people have talked about other things. I have had the mic a while.
Well,
let me just see what they want to do. I want to pose a question. Has anyone ever heard of the Zoll machine? The Zoll machine is supposed to be I guess there are a number of diagnostic instruments, but it's one that's supposed to detect not only what's wrong in the body, but what sort of allergies you would suffer from, how a drug would affect you, and so forth. You ever heard of that? It supposedly cost them like $3,000 to have it in this country. It was made in Germany. I don't know. It might be.
Yeah, if you would spell it Zoll, I think we would be able to.
Yeah.
That's my German's bad. Okay.
That's well known in certain circles in this country. Dr. Volf has come here about a year and a half ago to lecture, and some of his key people have come back to continue that teaching. So there are doctors in this country who are using this equipment.
Is that just a radionic instrument too, then?
No, not at all.
It's an electronic acupuncture, if you want to think of it that way.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
What I wish to pick up as a corollary to what I brought out before and the interferon. Some people are taking, say, vitamin rates and feeding those to people with the idea that they don't need to take as many vitamins when they have been given treatment with the radionic device. But they still would use some, but they can do much less. So the same idea would be less medication when given a treatment. Has anyone had occasion to look into that?
I'll say again, doctor, what?
All right, I hit one hand in the back end. Do you want to add anything to this point? Yeah, we do it with color, but I'm thinking like specific, either a vitamin or some supplement that you consider helpful at the time.
Interferon? Yeah.
Well, yes. All right. The point was that there has been discussion that a large dose of vitamin C will help produce interferon, yes. But I agree with you that there's been comments along those lines. The only reason bringing this up is that many times you have people who cannot take the vitamins, they can't swallow the vitamins too much, and there's always a problem of cost and so on. And if you can combine working with rates to see whether or not they can get along with much less than hardly any of the substances, and they need just a little bit for the physical substance.
Are you suggesting, too, that what we would do is to broadcast those things which might induce the body to produce interferon on its own?
Well, yes. The concept seems to be that the body is able to utilize more efficiently. For instance, if we're talking in terms of minerals and vitamins, the body can do a better job with what you give it in terms of supplementation when you also give it support through the broadcast.
Ah, I see. Yeah, thank you, doctor.
And without any additives or succussing, or does it begin to lose that additive?
I think he asked if anyone's had any experience transferring energy to water, and does it keep? Now, you're talking about impotentizing or other process as well, right? The transference.
Right.
All right. What I have found at RPI, and the way we've done it, we've tested it in two ways. We've tested the effects of these energies transferred to water on growth rates of various types of plants, tomatoes, and so forth. And we also would test it from the standpoint of spectra. And what we have found is that 1 year later, when we tested the same water on these plants, they not only made the plants grow just about as fast, if not, but always faster than the normal, the controlled. They also maintained this strange molecular structure, the shift, in other words, in the spectra. And this bothered spectroscopists because they're saying that water, whatever you do to it, water has a very small relaxation time. So if you hit it with some sort of energy and you stretch the bond a little and you gave it a jiggle and it vibrated and everything, at best, it should only stay in that for a matter of, maybe microseconds? And let's give it milliseconds. I mean, what's going to keep it excited? And that's a good question. And they cannot accept the fact that what we've done has changed it and perhaps are using a higher dimensional mode. And if you want to use traditional quantum mechanics, maybe we're causing it to go to a state and there's a forbidden transition back, so it's going to take a real long time to get back to normal. Now, how long it's going to stay in that state, I don't know.
This is close enough. Are you able to hear me? Here's a general type question I would like to raise. And this has to do with the establishment of various rates. You, when working in psychotronics, and you're working with rates. Now, whose rates are you using? You're using rates that come with the instrument, or you take some of the old round rates or other rates. What do you think about those rates? What do they represent? What about when you build your own instrument and you start working with rates that you discover? What do they represent? I would like to get some points from people who have been into this for years. Can we look at the rates as different languages? I mean, after all, they have different rates that refer to the same substance, to the same organ, or whatever the same is that we're considering. What are we dealing with in a situation like this?
If I may, I'd like to point out one thing, and not by any means to stop anyone who has any answer or information to contribute to that question. Fine, come on along. But in Pete Kelly's demonstration and live hands-on bit this evening upstairs, one of his things will be showing you how to convert one set of rates into another set of rates, or somebody else's rates into the rates that you use, and so forth. So he's doing this quite successfully. That's only a partial answer, but it's in the right direction.
Right.
I would like to explore that even a little, one step further then. To understand, what do we mean by rates? What are we doing? Because I know one practitioner who's been into this field for more than some people's lifetime, and He's continually updating his rates, finding a more effective rate, changing the numbers. Now, if the rate is valid the first time, why should he have to be able need to update or change the numbers to get a better rate, for instance? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What is the meaning of those numbers? Anybody care to express any thoughts on this?
Somebody else first.
We go to analogy. Julius, for example, let us say where we live, you have WOR, which is, 710 kilohertz. Now, if you've got a well-built radio, most of you know that once you start around 700, you can start tuning in, just to pick that station. Or even if you go over to 720, if you have a high enough gain, certainly the station sounds a little better at 710 than at 720. It will do, and you can hear. And you may miss a few of the high notes or the low notes if you don't tune in on the spot. But certainly analogously, the right number is better than the near right number.
Well, you found a number that was 200 the next time. Now, that isn't close to the original number. See, that's what's happening.
Well, it goes to prove that, Shakespeare was right when he said, there's more in heaven and earth than ever dreamt of in your philosophy Horatio. Once we get enough new numbers, we will suddenly discover that there's some relationship amongst them in all probability. We haven't got enough data, and the data you've got a little, I've got a little, some other people have got a little, and maybe if we all pulled it, there would obviously be some logical mathematical sequence that will show up, or at least this is my hypothesis. I didn't want to appear to be monopolizing, but getting back to your interferon thing, you know, the people in Sweden, the interferon work began in Sweden, and they seem to have gotten remarkable results statistically on their work. Suddenly, we are doing work here in the United States, and the results are not anywhere statistically what they were in Sweden. And one of the things I suspect is the Swedes had very limited numbers. See, we've got to do it right, and we've got to do big numbers. The problem with interferon is a cookie stuff that has to be extracted from more cookie proteins, and I've got the sneaking suspicion that the quality or the quantity of pure interferon in that bottle labeled interferon in the United States is a hell of a lot less than the stuff in Sweden. And if you've got, and if you've got, give somebody 10 cc's of pure interferon, and yet you give them 10 cc's, 5 cc's of which are good, you can't expect the same therapeutic results. And I think the thing that we're going to discover with the interferon thing is not that interferon doesn't work as well, but half of the stuff we're injecting is crap, to use a technical phrase.
With regard to rates, in a kind of facetious mode, I think that it depends on the quality of the instrument. If you use a bad quality instrument, you're going to get a second rate. That's poor. But seriously, I think that what we've ignored here is the operator dependence, not on the rate per se, but let's say that an operator is trying to tune a radionic instrument and is just not either that not that well trained, or they are not really that feeling up to par that day. And I've had times that one, or can I rely on the rate that I get? Now, when I'm looking for a rate, I don't rely on what I find the first time. What I have tried to do is to use, if I find a rate for a particular instrument, then I'll deliberately turn the dials, because I can't see the dumb things, and I depend on somebody to read it. I don't want to know what the rates are. I mean, I don't want to know what the numbers are. And I'll tune again and see if I come on that same rate. Then I'll have somebody else that I know is an operator. We'll flip the dials a little and have them tune and see what we're getting. Now, what I have found, if you get operators that are really good, I have found that they are pretty much going to get the same rates or close. And some even get, what's interestingly enough, some kind of harmonic. But they will get rates, and I don't think it's proportional to the frequency per se, but they'll get rates that are almost identical. And then I regard those as pretty accurate. And I think that's going to vary from one type of instrument to another, not from one instrument to another. You get two DLOR machines, they should be the same. But like, I wouldn't expect that my rate, the machine that I built, I would not expect that my rate would be the same, exactly the same, as, say, a Hieronymus machine or a Gallimore machine, because I've included different modes of tuning as well. And so that has to be encompassed in the machine.
Comment, what have you. I think, obviously, to those that are here, this kind of an exchange, and we are having an exchange, is definitely of interest. Okay, now this organization hasn't yet done its job as far as publications and so forth are concerned, but the input is necessary. And we've begged for this kind of exchange through our publications. The vehicle has been almost available and it's going to be available. But there's got to be these things coming in and going out. Charles, you have a comment.
David, last year I gave you at the Houston Conference the paper on vibrations or on numbers. What a number means in the mind aspect of the operator. And you have
wow.
You can print it out right. What you
I'd like to see
it.
We that.
Have
it,
and it will be, it is in the file.
Now, as of the present time, in fact, as of the time perhaps as recently as a couple of weeks at the most before this conference, it began to be apparent that, all right, by guys, at this point we can see there's enough cash money available that we can whoever the new officers and so forth are, we can get this phase of it off the ground. And at least if we get it started, then certainly this will create enough interest and so forth that then it'll begin to perpetuate itself. This just hasn't been available. That's a very practical reason. It's not an excuse. There's no excuse. But it is the reason why this has not yet happened. But this is an essential thing in this organization. It must happen. So really all I'm doing right now is saying, okay, it hasn't happened. It's going to happen, and get the stuff in. Whether it's questions, things like Charles has offered, information that has been developed and so forth that can go out and be used and be commented on and other people can develop from and that sort of thing. Beautiful. Anything. Dumb questions. There is no such thing. But anyone who has any kinds of questions, this is going to be the publication's route, particularly the newsletter route, which will be primarily for the membership and so forth. That's the place. And this is where we need to do these things. Okay?
Well, thank you. An opportunity to for all of us to really find out what's going on legitimately in the field. I mean, there's just nothing like this. I've never seen anything like this in this country. I mean, I constantly was looking for outlets, and you can't really exchange these type of ideas in, say, parapsychology organizations. And I'm not against parapsychology per se. I mean, just saying that you can't, because they don't recognize psychotronics. Now, there's two schools of thought on it. But I definitely would encourage it. I'm quite excited about it. Again, I'm glad that I'm here for that, for this purpose.
This question came up about rates, and I met a man a couple of years ago who's doing a lot of work in flying saucer research. He's worked with Major Kehoe from Operation Blue Book. The Air Force is keeping out information on the rug, so to speak. And in doing so, they confiscated some German documents that explained near the end of the war they had run out of medicine and doctors, and they were using a very unusual form for diagnosis, and treatment wasn't mentioned, but diagnosis was. What they were doing is attaching a wire to the patient's body in some place. I'm not quite sure how this works, but the wire was being drawn out from the body and being held, and attention was evidently as important as it was just keeping it straight. And someone who is sensitive, and I don't know what the definition of that word is, but someone who is sensitive enough, and probably someone who could handle a rubbing plate well, would take their fingers and move it down the wire very slowly. And they would feel null points, or where, say, the sinusoidal wave would cross the zero line, and they could, he'd say, here's one here, here's another one here, another one. They could measure that distance and find out what the waveform was, or the frequency, and from that, they went backwards to see what the organ was. And they found out, sort of in the back door through hit and miss, what some of these major problems were. I'm in the process now of trying to get those rates. And I think if we can get those, and if enough people are interested in doing that, we can kind of build an information source of rates. They can find a conversion factor or find out a general rate that's good for all equipment, because there's got to be some standard here. Okay, something else I mentioned earlier was these gels. I have the gels here, and I have an address. I can leave it with Mr. Rhodes if you like, or I can give it to you over the air, over the mic. And where to get a hold of this person in England and what to call them. And if nothing else, it's a great way to experiment. It's interesting, I'd forgotten this, that all these rates have been radionically placed on these colored gels. And you're about to see what a gel looks like. And they're minerals. They're all mineral. And they're usually gemstones. I'll pull a couple out here haphazardly. I'm the only one who've handled these in the past, so I think it's a good idea that I still be the only one to handle them. For instance, other beautiful colors. Here's one. It's sapphire, lapis, and cat's eye.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, sir.
For an experiment, and also announce at the moment that Pete Kelly is now holding forth on the floor above, immediately above this room. Why don't you take these things up here and see what kind of readings he can get on his device?
Sure, well,
of the mineral content in
Pete and I live in the same town, so it won't be much problem to work with
him.
Okay?
And the special event, entertainment, wine and cheese and so forth, is also open and available.
Okay, this is... Kim Stranwitz, and we are talking about the solar color tinctures. These are color gels that were developed by an R.P. Beasley, B-E-E-S-L-E-Y. His address is White Lodge, Stockland, S-T-O-C-K-L-A-N-D, Green Road, it's all one sentence, Stockland Green Road, Speldhurst, S-P-E-L-D-H-U-R-S-T, comma, capital N, small r, period. Not sure what that means. The town is Tunbridge Wells, T-U-N-B-R-I-D-G-E, then capital W-E-L-L-S. It's in Kent, England, and their zip code is T as in Tom, N as in Nancy, 30TT. And their phone number, if you want to call them, is 089-286-3166. Okay, you can refer to them as solar color tinctures. These are gels that you expose light through to water. That's just me. Okay?